Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Trail Life Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Stoner, and yes, it has been a long, long time, almost a year and a half to be exact, and I want to thank you for the subscribers. I want to thank our followers on Instagram and social media for sticking with us and continuing to download and listen to the episodes. You know, we've got some new stuff coming out this year. And we're going to be reformatting the podcast. We are going from what was once a weekly podcast to a bi-monthly. So we'll be releasing new episodes on the 1st and 15th of every month moving forward. And to kickstart this new season and this new era of the Trail Life Podcast, we're going to start with another special series. This time it's called Ultra Buds Unleashed. Our guest host is going to be Isabella Janovic from Ultra Buds. She is, as many of you know, is known as Ultra Izzy B on the trails. And she has got a laundry list of runners that she's been wanting to talk to and get on the show, hear their stories, and just share some really fun laughs. So the next 3 months will be all short series from her, and maybe more. But this at least gives you guys a good start in back into the show. And I appreciate you again for listening. Continue to follow us. And don't worry, guys. I'll be back really soon with some new episodes that I am recording right now at this point. But that's either a threat or a promise. I don't really know. So anyway, guys, until that point, thank you again. Here we are with Ultra Buds Unleashed.
Izzy B here, and this is the first episode of the Ultra Buds Unleashed series on the Trail Life Podcast. In this conversation, I am accompanied by my friend Kevin Goldberg, who is an ultra runner, endurance coach, and co-host of the Distance to Empty podcast. Known for taking on some of the toughest 200-plus mile ultra marathons, Kevin channels his passion for endurance into both his own training and helping others succeed. As a coach, athlete matchmaker at Training Peaks, and an endurance coach himself, Kevin is dedicated to guiding athletes toward their goals. Get ready to be inspired as we dive into Kevin's journey, his insights on ultra endurance racing, and his passion for helping others thrive in the sport. Let's unleash the trail together.
Well, help me turn the turning. Well, help me get it right. I don't want to hurt nobody.
Kevin, thanks so much for coming onto the show. Appreciate you taking the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Izzy. I'm excited.
So I'm kind of starting here as I'm having guests on the show. The number one question I like to ask people, because I'm connected with all the guests I have on the show, is tell the story of how we met.
So I had to think about this one because I feel like you've just kind of always like last, like, I don't know, 5 or so years. It's just like I run into you all over the place. We, you know, every once in a while we message or text, and like, you know, there's been like a relatively frequent stream of communications and run-ins. So it was hard for me to pinpoint exactly where we met. But I think, and maybe you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, I think we met at Tahoe 200. I don't remember the year. It was shortly after Gabe Rubenstein had finished, and we were sitting around the fire sitting around the finish line. And I forget who, but someone introduced me to you and was like, hey, this is Izzy. She, you know, is in this media space with this company and that company. Like, you know, you guys should talk, like, you know, you have a lot in common. I think that was the origin point.
Yep. That was it. And I think I started talking shit to you, like, what kind of beer are you drinking or something like that?
And then I feel like I've run into you at, like, you know, on the other end of a camera at, you know, Cocodona many times and other 200s, other races, and just kind of, you know, all over the place. So,
yep, that was an awesome race. So I got to pace Gabe, and Gabe Peterson was at the finish line with cold beer ready for us.
That's right. Yep.
So tell the story here. How did you get into trail running, and how did that turn into running 200 mile races?
Yeah. So I guess I got into running when I met my wife, Melanie, back in college. I was into, like, you know, intramural sports, super sort of like a little bit of ADD, hyperactive kind of kid, and was constantly moving. running was limited to like, you know, a couple of miles on the treadmill to warm up before the gym or before a game of some sort. But when I met Melanie, she was training for the Chicago Marathon. This would have been back in, I think it was 2011. So what's that, close to 15 years ago. And I was fit enough to sort of like jump in and like do some of the training with her because that's what she was doing. And I was, you know, hey, I met this new girl. We're hanging out. Like, what is she doing on the weekend? She's running long runs. Okay, I guess I'll go run long runs. back then, you could sign up for the Chicago Marathon just to sign up. Like, you didn't have to, there was no huge lottery or anything. So I was like, well, if I'm going to do this training, you know, might as well sign up for the race. So I signed up for the race. And you know, we ran it together. We ran it like it was a party. So I think we were like 5 hours and change, and it just felt like easy and fun and like amazing. And I was hooked. I was like, oh, this is great. Gonna sign up for another one and go like way, way, way faster. Was on pace for like sub 3:30 for the first 18 miles, bonked and hit a huge wall and finished in like 3:59. And I was like, oh, it's not easy to go faster in the marathon. Like that takes work. So worked at that for a little while. Didn't really love the like road running and working to get faster in those races. And then literally stumbled upon a trail running race while we were out on a hike one day up in Bear Mountain in New York. It was one of those North Face Endurance Challenge. Like they used to have a race series, like half marathon to 50 miler. And we stumbled upon like, look at all these weirdos with like no shirts and like water, holding water bottles running like on trails. So immediately went home and signed up for the 50-mile version of that series in DC and kind of skyrocketed from there. Just like, just kept jumping up in distance, like faster than I should have. Yeah, fell in love with trail running, loved the vibe, the kind of adventure side of it versus like the, you know, the times and the speed work and the marathon style of training. Rambling a little bit, but to answer your question of how I then jumped from kind of more traditional trail running distances to these multi-day 200 plus things, which has been my focus for, geez, I guess almost 7 years now, which is crazy to say out loud. Yeah. I ran my first in 2018. I had a bilateral hip surgery in late 2016 and early 2017. So pretty major surgeries that took me out for, I was basically off running for a full year. I was non-weight bearing on crutches for a total of 4 months. It was a huge kind of, you know, setback at the time. It seemed like a huge setback. And I was looking for an event that was like, okay, this was worthwhile. Like you did this so that you could continue doing what you love to do. You did this so you could continue to like run and do, you know, live your life pain-free. Like what is a big, scary, stupid adventure that would like put a stamp of success on this story and like prove to myself that like, hey, this was the right path. Like, I'm glad I did this. So I considered like some hundreds. I thought about doing an Ironman. And then I stumbled upon Destination Trails Bigfoot 200. And I was like, this is it. That's what it's going to be. So I signed up for that. And then here we are today.
Oh, wow. So your first 200 was Bigfoot 200 in 2018, which is known to be the hardest of the destination trail races. So maybe kind of explain a little how that was hard in your experience, how hard that is for not just you, but your crew and pacers and your experience with that.
Yeah, I remember the first one better than many of them, which is probably no surprise. But I had a great crew and pacing team. My wife, Melanie, was out there with me, one of my good buddies and coach at the time, Andrew Simmons, and a mutual friend of ours, Paul Jesse, came out. And I think Paul paced like 90 miles and then did the Wonderland Trail like the weekend after.
What?
Typical Paul Jesse fashion. So had a super team. I had like no goals other than to finish, which sometimes I miss that sort of freedom of that feeling because I now put a lot of pressure on myself. It's all like internal pressure, of course, but it's like I have these expectations and these, you know, process goals and outcome goals. And man, back in 2018, it was just like, just get to the finish line under, you know, at all costs. Like that was the only goal. And it felt sort of like liberating to like not really care about anything else. And it went, I think because of that, because there was less weight on it, like it was super intimidating, but it went pretty smoothly, like as far as 200s go. I'd say I had less like speed bumps and you know, problem solving to do at Bigfoot 2018 than I have in subsequent years. It was a great race. I remember probably about 3/4 of the way through, I realized I could have like a 7 in front of my finishing time in the 70 hour range. And I was like, oh man, that's like, I had, you know, I was thinking 80, 900 hours. So I was like, just absolutely stoked on it. And, yeah, really, I mean, at this point, 7 years down the road, nothing but, good memories from Bigfoot 2018.
So you ran all three of the destination trail races. How many have you ran in total in the US? So it would be 4 200s.
I've run 9 200s in the US.
In the US. And then last year you got to run your first one in Europe.
Yeah, I did the Tour de Jeans with a group of friends. We've already mentioned some of them on the podcast here. The Gabes from San Diego. So Gabe Peterson and Gabe Rubenstein and I went out to Cormier, Italy to do the Tour de Jeans, which, man, I can't even compare it to anything over here.
Oh, because I was going to ask you, how does that compare to the ones in the US? Because isn't it like 100 times harder?
Yeah, I mean, it is like it is 100 times harder. And I often feel like I'm being like hyperbolic and like dramatic when I talk about Tour de Jeans. But I really like confidently can say, like, I often use the metaphor and like, again, dramatic and maybe a little hyperbolic of like, it makes, you know, Cocodona and all these other 200s over here look like they're like bike path races.
Wow. How big of a difference?
Tour de Jeans, like, it's, I mean, I got 86,000 feet of vertical gain and loss. I got 220 miles. So it's just, it's so steep. And the climbs, unlike anything here in the US, even in Colorado, where like, you know, we have these big 14ers, but you're starting at 10, 11,000 feet. So the climbs themselves are, you know, 2, 3, 4. There's a couple of 5,000 foot climbs here in Colorado, out in California. Out of Tour, they're all 4, 5, 6,000 feet in one shot. And it's one after the other. I mean, there's like an 8,000 foot climb in a single shot. It's just one after the other. The conditions are harsh. It's just like, it was the coolest experience ever. And all simultaneously the worst experience ever.
And isn't the crew and pacing rules different there too, which makes it harder?
Oh, it's chaos. So there's no pacing. As far as what the rules are, it's depends on who you ask. It seems to change constantly. It's almost like, if you're Italian, there's one set of rules. If you're French, there's another set of rules. If you're American, there's a third set of rules. It's hard to figure out, but yeah, the real big difference is no pacing. And that's a lot of time to be alone with yourself. Like I got lonely and, you know, definitely in my head more at Tour de Jeans than I have in US 200s. It also took a lot longer. I'm not used to having to navigate a night 4 or a night 5. It really challenged me in a lot of new ways, and it scares me to go back there, but I definitely want to get back there one day.
And how are the aid stations compared to here for 200s?
You know, it's strange because that region of Italy, the food is amazing. Like it's everything you think when you think Italy. It's like, if you're going out to a restaurant, you don't even need to look at reviews. Like any restaurant is going to be like some of the best food you've ever had. That said, the aid stations were terrible.
What?
So like you're in this amazing valley, this incredible part of the world. It's like the most beautiful scenery you've ever seen, the best food you've ever had. And the aid stations all have exactly the same things. And I mean, the pasta dishes are made, I think it's orzo, the pasta that's like more kind of like rice, the little tiny rice. So it's like, it's all orzo. It's really hard to get in like substantial, like big calorically dense meals. They have like biscuits and like, it's just like very light fare. It's really, really different. You know, it's not like destination where you can be like, hey, I want an omelet or a burger and like customize it and get like a $2,000 calorie bomb that's going to bring you back to life. Like it's just, it was really challenging for me to get in the calorie. And that was with crew. I was able to like have pizza brought in from outside. I was able to have, at one point they got me McDonald's from Aosta. So even with that, it was a challenge. And I will say the refugios, which are like the high altitude mountain huts, they're open for like hikers and like you can stay overnight there. So they're open throughout the race and they have restaurants and kitchens and you can actually sit down and like order a meal. So like one morning I got like, you know, bacon and eggs and they like cooked it and made it. And like, that was really great, but I had to order it, like wait for it, pay for it. It was like from the restaurant, not from the aid station. So very, very different experience. If anyone is running 200s and like Tour is on the list, I can't recommend it enough. I will, you know, go on and on about how difficult it is, but it's like nothing else.
Wow. And with Cocodona, you ran Cocodona the first year they had it, right?
I crewed the first year. Second year.
So you were on the live stream a lot. For those that watch Cocodona, the live stream is huge for Cocodona. I mean, that's how I got sucked into the 200s the first year, just watching it. I had my TV turned on for a whole week and I didn't get much work done that week. So let's explain to the crowd here who may not know you. How did you get the nickname the People's Runner?
So I mean, I'm not 100% sure, because I was running the race when this all happened, and I don't go back and like rewatch the live streams or anything, but almost embarrassingly so, I was on the live stream while running the race, like a lot. Like I was on there, you know, at least once an hour for 70 plus hours. Like I was pretty constantly in the live stream. So what that means is I'm out there hiking, jogging, whatever, moving forward through the Arizona mountains and desert. And I have my phone and a battery pack and I'm logging into the, you know, Mountain Outpost live stream, clicking on the chat and like chiming in and like in real time, like, you know, asking people about the race, chatting with people and like making friends while I'm, you know, in the digital
while
I'm running. So that, I guess people thought that was funny, and really took to it. And that fueled me to like do it more, right? It's like, hey, I'm getting it. It's like when a kid gets attention, right? It's like, oh, that worked. Like I'm going to keep doing this. Cause it was helping me. Like I'm, you know, on the verge of like, you know, passing out from exhaustion, like I'm grumpy and like, this is putting a smile on my face. So I'm like, hey, maybe it is slowing me down, but like, from a morale point of view, it is bolstering me. It's helping. So I leaned into it. And I, at some point, they started calling me the People's Runner for sort of just engaging with the race while the race was going on, and it stuck. I've now been back to Cocodona each subsequent year. So 22, 23, 24, signed up for 25. And, the nickname has stuck.
And I think there's another one too, like Big Goldberg Energy or something.
Yeah, that was a chant that people started. They started typing BGE in all caps, which they made, you know, stand for Big Goldberg Energy. So I guess they liked the energy I was putting into the live stream while I was running out of energy in the real world.
Yeah. So you became a celebrity, the People's Runner. From the media side, someone, because I did the live stream 2 years at Cocodona, and everyone's asking about the People's Runner. And when you see, once I have the camera on you, like the amount of viewers just like keep going and the chat is just going, going, going. It's pretty cool to see. All right. So not only are you the People's Runner, which is not your day job, you also have a day job in the running industry working at Training Peaks. So tell us a little bit what you do there and how that got started.
Yeah. So I've been with Training Peaks for, I think this year will be 9 years. I think I'm about at 9 years. So I'll be on my 10th year here soon. When I moved out to Colorado nearly 10 years ago, I got a job as a mail carrier off the bat. They were hiring and I needed a job because I moved out here kind of on a whim. You know, that was a lot of work and interfered with training. And at the time I was working with a coach on Training Peaks. I knew about Training Peaks. I knew they were based out here. And I was like on their like career page every day, emailing the HR, got denied a couple of times for roles, and finally got an interview with them after about 6 months of being out here in Colorado. And it was for a assistant position in the coach match program. So what the coach match program is at Training Peaks is essentially like a coaching company, like a CTS, or, you know, we operate it sort of as a coaching company, but it's a service where coaches can get accredited, apply for the program. And then we basically help them grow their business, help them fill up their roster. You know, we get leads, athletes who write into Training Peaks every day, looking for a coach, training for this or that. And we have coaches who can help them accomplish those goals. So I became the assistant there. And now today I'm the manager of that program.
Oh, wow.
And it's really a dream job. It's very flexible. I work with coaches all over the world. And it's cool to have play a small part in, you know, helping coaches grow their business, helping athletes find, you know, their training partners, and, you know, ultimately helping people accomplish goals.
And I've met a few of your coworkers at different events, and they're all amazing. We always have fun talking about you.
it's a good group. It's a great group. It's a great place to work. And it's if you're not familiar with Training Peaks, the way that any higher up at Training Peaks would cringe if you described it this way, but the easiest way to describe it is it's kind of like Strava, but more analytical and for coaches and athletes versus just the social side of like athletes.
And you also work on the other end too as a running coach. So how did you start coaching too?
Yeah. So about 9 years ago when I started at Training Peaks, you know, day one, they're like, oh, and you get a free coach account, you know, you work here. So here's your free coach account. And I'm like, oh, like, cool. I don't have any athletes to coach, but I'll poke around in here. So I was, you know, I'd already been running ultras for years at that point. So I created a coach profile and, just was like, hey, this would be really cool. Like it's, you know, it'd be a cool thing to do. It's something I'm passionate about. 9 years later, it's actually a pretty viable part of my portfolio, so to speak. Gross, right? But like, it's great. I mean, I've had a pretty steady roster for a long time. I love my athletes. I'm very lucky. You know, I see a lot because I work with hundreds of coaches and thousands of athletes. So I know that I'm lucky. I have really fantastic athletes. They're committed. They're communicative. They're just friendly. I consider them friends. So I love working with my athletes. It's something that doesn't feel like a job to me. I'm like, just, you know, when I get to like plan for my athletes or communicate with them, it feels more like I'm just like helping a friend, which is just so cool. So yeah, I actually, last year used that BGE, phrase from Cocodona and created a website, tried to be a little more legit, BGE coaching, Big Goldberg Energy Coaching. And, yeah, I love coaching. If I, you know, I often think about, you know, would I do it full time? I don't know if that would take away some of the love for it, but, I hope it's always part of my life in some capacity.
So what kind of clients do you work with? Only clients that run 200s or more, or beginners, everything?
Yeah. You know, I work with anyone really. I mean, it's for me, it's always like, because I have this role at Training Peaks where my job is to help people find coaches. I always tell people like who ask me if they're interested in coaching, I say like, hey, I'd love to chat. And if I'm not the right fit for you, I can help you find someone who is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that doesn't happen super often, but I've certainly said like, hey, I think this so-and-so is going to be a better fit for you. Why don't we get you linked up here? You know, first and foremost for me, I just want to have like a conversation and see what a person's goals are. Because of my niche, my personal experience, and just like what, you know, lights my fire, I would say that more than half of my athletes are training for 200 plus races. And that is like, as I get more full up here, you know, cause I do still have a full-time job and I do cap my roster. I don't go over a certain amount. I'll be more selective and probably look for those like 200 plus mile athletes. Cause that's where my passions lie. But I have athletes training for 50 Ks, 50 milers, hundreds. So, you know, it's all fun.
So not only are you a running coach, have a full-time job at Training Peaks, is the people's runner, because we know that's a job too, right? You also have, just with your love of the community, you started your own podcast, Distance to Empty. How did that get started?
Yeah, so that was, we just came up on a year. I'm not sure when this podcast is going to air, but December of 24 was the first full year of the Distance to Empty podcast, which is a podcast that our mutual friend Peter and myself started, which it's fully dedicated to the 200 plus mile distance. So, it's, you know, something we were already kind of talking about, like we're constantly just bantering on about, 200s and annoying all the people around us in our lives. So we were like, let's like make this official and see if we, you know, can put something together that people would find value in. It really has taken off. I didn't anticipate it to be like as big of a success as it has been. It's, you know, it's such a small niche, like, you know, 200s, like, mm-hmm. you know, there's so few in the grand scheme of things. There's so few people who have run 200 mile races. But it's been a really fun ride. You know, we're dedicated to telling stories, from 200 mile runners from the very back of the pack to the people winning the races, to race directors, to, you know, sports scientists, nutritionists, people who are supporting the people running these races. It's been so much fun. Yeah. And I, you know, based on how many people are listening, like I know that it's reached far beyond the 200 community because it's, there's just only so many people in that community. So we hear like, oh, like I haven't run a 200, but I just find this so fascinating. And like, you know, hearing those things and getting those kind of reviews are just like, I mean, that stuff makes your day. It's been really fun.
And the course previews that you guys do, because you've ran so many 200s. You and Peter do the course previews. I think that's super helpful for people too. Definitely.
Yeah. And those are a lot of fun for us, sort of reliving the, because we try to do it like twofold, like the like actual technical aspects of the course preview. And then also like anecdotally, like what do we remember? How are we feeling at this point in the course? You know, like more storytelling and then just straight up, you know, this is how it is.
Like Peter and his Biffy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. At 10,000 feet at Moab. Yeah. Biffy bag is a different thing. Yeah.
But if you guys want to hear the story of Peter and the Bivvy, you're going to have to listen to the Distance to Empty podcast. We're not going to give that away. It's a good one.
That's right. And I don't even remember which episode we dug into. So you just have to listen to all of them.
Yeah. I don't know if it was one of the Moab preview ones or yeah, who knows? All right. So with all the jobs you're doing, your side project of the podcast, hanging out with your amazing wife, how do you have time to train for these races yourself?
So the beauty of the jobs, I guess, are they are all really flexible. So as long as I'm sort of getting the work done, I can choose when to do it and where to do it. I've been remote since my hip surgeries back in 2017. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, I work with coaches all over the world, and you know, all coaches in the UK, Australia, US. So I can really afford to sort of cater my schedule to their schedules. So I do a lot of my training during the day, and I do a lot of my work like early morning or late night, and not like super early or super late, but you know, like I'll start the day with some work, I'll do my training, and then I'll like mm-hmm. spend the evening on the couch catching up on work, which has worked really well for me. I don't think that's for everyone. I know like Melanie, for instance, much prefers like, you know, being in the office and getting it done and then having like, then separating from it. I've built my life where it's like, it's all the same, like work, play, it all just blends together, which can be, you know, it can be a lot sometimes, but I'd say, you know, 90% of the time I love it and mm-hmm. wouldn't have it any other way. So very lucky to like just have the flexibility in these sort of projects and jobs that allow me to stay on top of my training and my hobbies.
And having a wife that's a runner too, she completed her first 200 last year, right? Tahoe 200?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
Tahoe. So do you guys run together and train together?
We do. I just, you know, did Strava year in sports. She got beat out this year, but she was my number two training partner. Sorry. That was a
crazy. Who was number one?
My friend Chris, who I run with a lot.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm like, Peter doesn't look
like
you.
No, I was Peter's number one. He doesn't, he just runs alone all the time. We run together probably, you know, once a week or so. It's more of a scheduling thing than like a pace mismatch. It's not like I'm not running with her because like, you know, I'm too fast or she's too fast or whatever. It's just like I like to run at, you know, 2 p.m. and she wants to run at 5.
Yeah. Well, I have the same work schedule as you. I wake up early in the morning. I do a few hours of computer work and then I go train usually. But also I think it kind of helps being able to train at different times of the day because then you're prepared for race day, all the different temperatures and feeling sluggish or feeling fresh. I think it's kind of helped a lot.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. Every once in a while, I schlep myself out of bed really early to remember mm-hmm. that I can.
Yeah, exactly. Get that morning poop in before.
Yeah.
Poop training. That's a thing, actually. I do that before races. But anyway, moving on. What big races or events do you have for 2025 this year?
So I'm actually racing this weekend. By the time this airs, I'm sure it'll probably already be in the past here, but I'm racing on January 11th here at the Avalon 50 miler.
Oh, on Catalina Island.
Yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully come away with a new 50 mile PR there. Feeling good about that. The next thing I have is Cocodona 250. Can't seem to stay away.
Nope.
I've been telling myself that this is not my last year, but maybe my last like subsequent, you know, repetitive, like, you know, year after year, like I might take a little break, but we'll see. That's always easy to say that before the race, right? So Cocodona 250 is the big goal again. Just absolutely love that race and love to see myself improving there year after year. It's been a fun project to work on. And then Gabe Peterson and I are in the UTMB lottery. So we find out about that in a week or so.
Wow. And I remember you saying last year, because there was a whole bunch of pressure in the live stream chat, is he going to sign up while he's running? Is he going to sign up for next year while he's running? Because Cocodona registration opens. And so you had a little bit of pressure there.
Yeah. And I, you know, I probably would have. That didn't make its way to me until after I'd finished. So I didn't, cause like apparently that was happening like when I got on the sidewalks and streets, you know, at the very end of the race, and I didn't hear about it until after I finished. So if someone had like been like, hey, there's a lot of chatter, like you got to sign up now while you're running, I maybe could have been convinced.
Oh, we know to do that too this year.
Yeah. This year, make sure someone texts or calls or something. Yeah. We'll see. I'm, end of the year is kind of in flux, and I'm flexible. I just typically like to end the year with more like, I haven't done two 200s. Well, that's not true. I did it in 2023, but I tend to like doing one 200 a year. I found that multiple, I've done it plenty of times, but man, it's hard. It's hard to do multiple 200s in a year.
Yeah. And the traveling, logistics, getting crew, pacers, gear, travel funds, it all adds up. So that's a couple of huge races this year. And then Avalon 50 miler. Are you doing any other fun events, projects, pacing, FKTs, runcation?
Like 2 years ago, I made it a goal to try to pace and crew more than I raced. And that was really fun. I did a lot of pacing and crewing that year. Last year, I think I was about 50-50 with how much I raced versus paced. So I really do like, supporting friends and athletes at races. This year I'll be pacing and crewing at the Arizona Monster. I'll probably be pacing and crewing at Badwater 135 again, and who knows what else. But yeah, I'm always looking to be out there at events when I'm not racing them. I think that's really fun too. I'll probably be at Tahoe 200 if the podcast keeps taking off. Maybe we'll be at all of them. I'd love that to be a reality. We did just get our first like real podcast sponsor. That's like kind of a big deal for us. So
congratulations.
Super excited. Yeah. Hopefully that continues to grow in 2025.
So not only are you pacing a bunch of different friends at Arizona Monster, but do you also have athletes that you've coached that are running those races?
I do.
The 300?
I do have, I have four athletes running the 300. Yes.
So for those that are interested in running a 300, Kevin is your coach.
Yeah, well, no one has experience yet, but we'll have some experience and some data months. Points here. Yeah, no, I'm so excited for it. It's going to be.
That's amazing. Now, outside of running and racing, do you have any other 2025 goals this year? Maybe business or traveling or with the podcast, like kind of how you mentioned.
Yeah. Nothing as like. Set in stone as I do, you know, the running goals are on paper. They're signed up for everything else. I kind of, I certainly have goals and aspirations, but, a big thing that I have leaned into since I moved out to Colorado, nearly a decade ago was like the reason I left New York and came out here was that, you know, I was looking for time. I was like, I think time is like the most valuable currency that we have. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy with my time management right now and the things that I'm juggling. It all feels manageable. It feels like I'm enjoying it. So I don't have like huge aspirations to grow these things in any strategic way, but I do hope that they grow like as, you know, from the passion we're putting into them. So with the podcast, with the coaching, I like to write race specific training plans. So whenever I go and experience a race, I then create like a training plan specifically for that race. So that's always on my mind. So yeah, nothing set in stone, but certainly always looking for opportunity.
I love that response. Like, time, it's precious. You're not stressed out, but you're getting everything done and you're passionate about everything you do. I love that. That's kind of why I started my own business years ago, so that I would have more time to do those things and not be so stressed out all the time and have more time to run and play in the mountains, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So for those who are thinking of running a 200-mile race or are currently training for their first one, what's kind of your biggest tips and advice for a newbie 200 miler?
Well, first and foremost, you have to go to Distance Empty Podcast and listen to every episode over and over and over again.
Good answer.
I think these things are, they're really scary and they're really hard, but I think they're not as scary and not as hard as people build them up to be. And I think, like, once you realize that, they become much more approachable and easy to break down into smaller bites. And again, like, I'll go back and say, like, they are really scary and really hard, like, no doubt. But I think we often, like, put them even on an even higher pedestal. So if it's something you want to do, you have the means to do it, you know, physically, your health, your finances, because these are not cheap events by any means. And the registration is just the first step of that. It doesn't get any better after it. But if you're in a position to do these things, like, and you want to, that's all you need. The rest will come. It's not like, you know, you don't have to run 200 miles on the day you sign up. You have a lot of time. And I think there's a lot of resources out there now. There wasn't back in 2018 when I ran my first 200.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of the Wild West. It still is to an extent, but there are resources now. So, you know, reach out to the community and there's help out there. And these are attainable goals for anyone who wants to go after it.
Like Facebook groups, there's Wes's YouTube page, your podcast. You're absolutely correct. Amazing resources and a lot more coaches that know how to coach for the distance too.
Definitely. Absolutely. That's huge. Yeah.
Because it's different than 100-miler. People just think, oh, it's just like 100-mile, just more miles. No, the body goes through a lot of things, a lot of changes.
Yeah.
That you didn't think your body would go through.
Yeah. It's a double in miles, but it's triple, quadruple, five times in nights, you know, like you have to think of it that way. It's like the damage that happens to your body just from sleep deprivation alone is so hard to manage. That's one of the biggest puzzle pieces there is. So yeah, definitely, you know, whether it's paid help or just like, community engagement help, like don't go it alone. There's a lot of resources.
So what is your favorite race and why? And it doesn't necessarily have to be a 200-mile race.
Well, of course it has to be. That's my whole brand.
In case you wanted to say Avalon, I don't know.
Yeah, Avalon is a great race. I mean, Catalina Island is beautiful. It's if you haven't checked out Avalon 50, it's a great race. I get this question a lot. It's tough. I don't think it's Cocodona 250 as much as I love that race. I really do. Obviously, I'm going back for year four. I've done Bigfoot three times. Obviously, I love that course. It's very special to me. The Pacific Northwest is just, there's something magical about it. Yeah. But my favorite race is probably the one I had the worst time at. And it's Tour de Jeanne. It's just, I mean, I want to go have a good time. Like it's the fact that I had such a miserable time. I'm like, I got to go back there and have fun. I like, it's too epic and beautiful to like have a miserable experience. I need to go enjoy it. So I'll go with Tour de Jeanne.
And is that a hard lottery to get into?
Not for me.
All you guys got it.
We all get in on our first time. I think so. It's based on like each country has their own lottery essentially. So it's based on the number of people from your country that apply. I think historically the US has had about a 50% chance of getting in.
Okay.
So it's pretty good. I mean, it's probably going to take off like everything else and just get harder to get into, but it's at this point, it's still a relatively good chance of getting in.
Nice. And then what is your dream race to run one day?
Well, if you asked me a year ago, it would have been Tour de Jeanne. So check. I mean, I want to run, there's, you know, the Ultra Trail de Monte Rosa over in Switzerland. There's the Swiss Alps. I forget how the distance of it. I think it's close to 200 miles, but I'll probably say PTL is pretty high on my list, which is the teammate race where you buddy up with a teammate for the whole thing. That's part of the UTMB series.
Okay.
Good question. It's a different course every year. So I'm not 100% sure. It starts in Chamonix with the UTMB race series. And I believe it stays in France the whole time, but maybe it does cross over. I'm not sure. Again, it's different every year, but it's usually right around 180, 190 miles.
And your partner would be...
I've been trying to get, do you know who Matt Smith is?
No, I don't.
He's finished right before me in two of my Cocodonas, like the position, the one before me. I've been trying to coerce him to do it with me, which I get a lot of crap on from like, you know, Gabe and the crew of like Peter of not wanting to do it with one of them.
You're like, I'm accepting applications.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you offer me?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your inspiring story. I think it's really important and great how you shared about your hip story. And then you were able to run 200 after that. Inspiring how you sticking with your passions. Any other last tips, sayings, mantras you want to give anyone?
I'll just end with a funny story from Cocodona 2 years ago. Goes along the lines with the hips. So when I was crossing the river, leaving Sedona, I ran into Scott Rokas and we were talking. I forget if he was just about to have knee surgery or he had just had knee surgery, but we were talking about his knee replacement surgery. And I was telling him about my hip surgeries and I didn't mention that I had them replaced because I didn't have them replaced. I had a FAI impingement with microfractures and labrum repair, you know, a big surgery, but not a total replacement. As soon as I left and started climbing Casner Canyon, him and Howie take over the Cocodona Instagram during race week. And he posted, Kevin Goldberg just passed the river. You know, he's moving really well. And, you know, what many people don't know, like Kevin's running on two total hip replacements. Like, you know, and after the race, like I had people reaching out, like telling me what an inspiration I was. And like, at, like they had a hip replacement. They wanted me to coach them. I have a much smaller platform than Cocodona and Scott. And like, so I had to do a bit of like damage control of like, hey, that's, I did have big hip surgeries, but I don't have, you know, replaced hips. But the funny thing is coincidentally, I actually do work with several total hip replacement athletes now, because even after the explanation of like, hey, that's not who you, I'm not who you think I am. They're like, oh, well, let's still give it a go. And, it's been a pretty cool experience for me to get to work with these athletes who are coming back from, you know, THR surgery. So if you've had a total hip replacement and want to work with someone who hasn't, I'm your guy.
Perfect ending. Thank you so much, Kevin, for being here.
Thanks, Izzy. That was fun.